below your explicit rating for this episode.
Welcome to The Other 51. I'm your host, Brian Moritz, joined this week by one of my best friends on the planet, one of my favorite writers. I'm going to stop there because that's way too much sincerity for the entire tenor of our 30-year friendship. But for our purposes here, the author of the very excellent Substack, Dirt Nap, Jared Pavenny. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
It is. It's been a minute. I was recording in the basement last time that that we did this, and now I'm on the second floor. I got my own thing and everything.
She let you out of the basement?
She did. Isn't that swell?
Honestly, it's been so long since I've been out to your house, I didn't even realize that you had vacated the basement for an actual room with drywall.
It's amazing. It is. You know, dreams do come true. I can tell you that. So speaking of the last time you were on, I did want to start there. We'll talk all about Dirt Nap in a few minutes, but last time we were on, it was in the middle of the blog Al Dente heyday in your writing world. Yeah. And that has of course since gone to the blog farm upstate. And so I wanted to start on that because I do think it's interesting, not just starting projects, but realizing when to let them go and when to stop. So what was that decision like to stop blog Al Dente in whatever form it ended up being?
Well, so I have this problem. I've only ever worked as in-house so my actual job, as you know, is I work in public relations, and I've only ever worked in-house. So I've only ever really worked with one subject. For 18 and a half years, it was Alzheimer's disease and aging. So I have this thing where I need a creative outlet, because if you spend all day talking about one subject, you're going to go haywire, especially when you're dealing with something highly or very weighty like Alzheimer's. So I was adjuncting, and I adjuncted for about 7 or 8 years teaching graphic design. And it was one of those things where towards the end, it started to feel like work. And it wasn't fun anymore. And I realized that I was just going through the motions. So that happened to be right around the time we had our first child. So I wanted to be home more. Teaching four nights a week just wasn't cutting it. So right around that time, I started writing the blog just to, you know, because I wanted something else going on. And I started wanting a place where I could keep all the recipes I was making, the things that I was cooking, so that way I had somewhere to go back to it. So I started writing the blog, and it started picking up some steam, because I'm not one of those writers who doesn't look at their stats. I do, and it haunts me sometimes, and it's a space for anxiety and anger and wanting to throw things. But I started seeing it grow. So I started putting a little more effort into the structure of it. Started adding advertising to try to see if I can monetize it a little bit, because as you know, hosting a blog ain't cheap. I was self-hosting on a WordPress platform, and it was costing a couple hundred bucks a year for web space and domains and this and that. So it took off a little bit. I had a few posts that went, I had a post that sort of went viral. And that ran really till about 8 years ago, 2016-ish. And it was another case where I had produced at such a rapid rate and was producing so much content, I sort of burned myself out of it. And I was not really enjoying it anymore. I was taking lousy pictures. I wasn't putting much thought or effort into the writing. And I thought, you know what? This has to go on the shelf for a little bit, and let me rethink what I'm doing. Right around that time, so now this is going to go further back to high school. When I was in high school, I wrote for, I wrote for the evening newspaper in Syracuse. They had a magazine for teenagers called HJ Magazine. I basically covered my high school as a beat. While I was involved with that, the sports editor at the Post or the Herald Journal at the time, a guy named Steve Karlick, he would throw me the occasional story. Something that, it was, if they had eight people working, this was the 10th story on the board. They needed some coverage. They were sending a photog to it, but here, go do this, get a clip or two. Well, fast forward to 2016, Steve calls me, says, "Hey, I saw that you put your blog up on the on hiatus. Do you want to come review restaurants?" He goes, "It pays, and it's a regular thing." So that's how that happened. And so it really was about sort of getting burned out of it and not really measuring my time and effort the right way and budgeting how much I was going to produce, because it started to feel more like work than fun, which is what the whole point of the blog was, is to have fun around a topic that I enjoy. And when it stopped being that, it started to feel more like a burden. And that's when it needed to go away. I tried bringing it back in fits, tried bringing it back in fits and spurts. It just didn't feel right. I tried doing it during the pandemic. I tried doing a few posts to it of, "Hey, you're not going to the grocery store because everyone's afraid they're going to die. So here's how to cook with stuff you already have in your pantry." It just didn't feel right. What I would do is, though, however, differently, and this is mostly a postscript to the blog, is I wouldn't let my service lapse. I would download all the files, because you see, I let the service lapse and I lost everything.
Oh
If I
no.
want anything I wrote, I got to go back through the internet. I got to go to the Internet Wayback Machine,
Oh
and look it
no.
up. It's a real, I didn't even realize it happened. I thought I had a recurring charge on a credit card. No, it didn't charge. So El Dente is off in the ether. I know that some people say that when you put something online, it lives forever. No. I mean, you really got to know where to look for it. Took me an hour one day to find a recipe I was looking for on the Internet Archive, because I'm an idiot.
Do you ever miss it?
No, not a bit.
Okay.
Not a bit, because not a bit. It was, like I said, it became work. And it became work that I wasn't getting paid for, and it became work that I started resenting. So I stopped, and I'm glad I did. The flip side to the flip side to writing the reviews for Syracuse.com is that it's something new every week. There's a schedule. I'm accountable to someone else, not to myself, which is something else, because when you're accountable to yourself, you let yourself slide. Whereas I know that every other Thursday, something's got to run, or every Thursday, something's got to run. Every other Thursday right now, it's me. So I've got to have stuff in. So it's good in terms of the discipline that I need as a writer. My editor currently is really, really relaxed with letting me and the other reviewer pick what we're going to do. There's not a ton of there's not a ton of stress involved with that. The other writer and I have hacked up the schedule. We know we're good with everything, and it's just a matter of sitting down, writing, editing photos, filing it, and moving on. And that, frankly, that's just enough for me in terms of that creative itch.
That external deadline thing is so, I mean, I need that too. And it's funny because you think about like setting deadlines for yourself when you're writing for yourself or you're podcasting for yourself. But like, I realized a few years ago that like a deadline doesn't mean anything without a consequence. Like,
Oh,
I can
yeah.
have a deadline that I'm going to have something posted on my Substack tomorrow. But if I don't, it's not like I'm going to fire myself from my Substack. It's just going to go on. And so that's always the weird thing of like the deadline, like a deadline's not a deadline if you're not without a consequence.
Yeah. And when you're a freelancer, your consequence is payment. And your consequences are they going to look for someone else to cut my workload back a little bit? Your consequences, are you going to get the choice assignments? I had editors who wanted things in a week before they ran. And then I've had editors who it's supposed to run on Thursday, and I'm getting it in Tuesday afternoon. It's a, obviously you play to your editor, you play to your manager there. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If there's not a deadline there, that finish line is both cathartic, but it also holds you accountable in a way that you can't hold yourself accountable.
So I want to get to the new blog,
Yeah.
Dirt Nap. It's awesome, by the
Is
way.
it a blog? Is substacking a blogging? Is it, or
I
substacking is like a standalone verb?
yeah, I don't I was just writing about something that and something today, and I don't know. Like it's a, you it's technically a newsletter, but it's not really a newsletter. It's
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, whatever verb you put on it, it's really
Yeah.
good.
Thank you.
So how would you describe it?
Oh, how would I describe it? So, I think the elevator statement is that Dirt Nap is a weekly newsletter, I guess, blog that I write about death, dying, and grief. We all experience loss differently. But there are commonalities. There's common ground for all of us to find in that. And I think that when people take the time to think about how they grieve or how they haven't grieved, that there's space for you to learn and for you to grow and realize maybe what you've missed along your journey. Where maybe there's a space for you to help others. Really, it's catharsis. It's working stuff out in my head. I used to think about death a lot for no real reason. And there was always some unresolved stuff from when my mother had died back in the late 90s that either just never got worked out in therapy or I didn't even think of. And it was, we had gone a good stretch of time where we didn't have any family, close family die. And it was the passing of my father-in-law in June 2023 that sort of brought that all back up. The whole idea of how do people grieve? What is grief? And I'll kind of jump ahead on a question you're probably going to ask is I watched it again. It was the first time since the late 90s that we really had a loss in our family. And it was the first time we've had a loss with kids. And this one, it affected each kid differently, but it was particularly, I paid a particular attention to how my oldest dealt with it. She was just had just turned 13. In the way things kind of shook out, time and where people were in their worlds, this was my in-law's grandkid. Ella, my youngest, is very much my father and stepmother's grandkid. They spend a lot of time together. Not to say one doesn't see the other, but because at the time my father was living up north, my in-laws were down the street basically. They were over all the time. Layla spent so much time in their worlds that this was their grandkid. And so, Layla didn't just lose her grandfather, but it was like grandfather with an asterisk. So I spent a lot of time watching that, and that really it started leading to more questions. And sometimes when I'm working through something in my head, the easiest way for me to work through it is to write about it. And I started writing more and more, and I realized I had a series of essentially blog entries. I said, well, what if I published? I don't want to go back to a regular plot. I wanted something that was more spaced out, something that almost forced me to think about the cadence. And you were on Substack. I read other Substacks, and I thought, oh, what if I did this as a Substack? Where, I'm not going to publish daily. It's insane. I can't come up with 350 entries about death each year. That if they commit me. But if it was something like on a weekly cadence where we could pick a topic and dig into it and see where it went. So that's where it went. That's sort of where it went. And it really is. It's about working out some internal stuff, without necessarily seeing a therapist over it, while just digging into some topics that maybe I'd never thought of before.
So I'll cut this part out, but I never mentioned it to you. I know you wrote about this, but I remember at the funeral, Layla walking in with Missy's mom in the front and seeing them together. Like, this is a sound, I don't know the word other to say, but special. Like, that was just a really like special grown up moment for
No, and
her.
leave it in. I don't care if and that's something that I even wrote about. It's that, she, you see a lot in your kid in different in times when you least expect it. At the wake, Layla was very social, more social than I think she enjoyed being. But she was around comfort. She was around her cousins on Missy's side, my wife's side. She was around our friends, when you and Jeremy and Holly were there, and you brought Ellie with you, your daughter. She was around comfort. She was in a safe space. And the next day, she attached herself to my mother-in-law. And but not in that weepy, crying sort of kid way, but it was very protective.
Yes.
She walked in with my mother-in-law first, the daughters followed, and then me and my brother-in-law behind our wives. And that was, in retrospect, it showed a lot of grown-upness with her. And in about a month later, there was a close friend of the family who passed. He had been sick for years. He had had a stroke pre-pandemic, a devastating stroke. Living in skilled nursing, and eventually, wore down and died. And we were going. We had made arrangements to. Her and I were Missy and I were going to the services. And Layla had said, that she wanted to go. Like, you haven't seen this person in years. And it didn't click. I'm like, fine, you want to go? Go. You know what? If you need to experience this else otherwise, that's fine. So we brought her, and it became clear that she was there to protect my mother-in-law. She was there to, and she walked with my mother-in-law. She was there in ways that maybe because my sister-in-law was a pallbearer in the service, and maybe Missy would have walked with her mother. But no, Layla jumped right in. And it was like, okay, this is why. She wasn't going to let her grandmother go through the loss of a very close friend alone. And for that, yeah, I got it.
And to be able to kind of work through that in your writing has got to help you. And it's universal, right? You start to
Yeah.
see, you get the, it's not the same with every kid and every grandparent or anything
No.
like that, but you get the, you get to see that, and like you said, work that out and kind of see things like that.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is your kid you're talking. And part of it is, and though she hates it, she even realizes she and I are very much alike, down to the facial expressions. It's stunning. It's just staggering. My sister-in-law will tell you that sometimes trying to have a conversation with her is like trying to talk to me, and it's not always a successful endeavor. And I recognize it, and I've tried to get better over time with that. But it's your kid, and you're in a situation like that. You're trying to figure out what's going on in their mind, except that in this case, I sort of know what's going on in their mind because she is so very much like me. And I think that there's some common ground, there's some common space where we all exist in grief. Whether it's a loved one who drops dead from a heart attack, someone you've watched live with cancer for months and years, someone tangential to your life, friend, family member who passes, and there's questionable circumstances. There's a common denominator we all work in, and then it just kind of grows out of there. And that's what I'm trying to do is, it's I say try to build some community, but build some conversation around it. We've had some, I'm doing these Griever's Digest, which you were my first. And but they've every one of them, there's been five of them so far, and each one of them has been so starkly different. You talked obviously about your grief following the loss of your mother. My stepmother, inspired by you, talked about really for the first time, I think in any public way, the loss of her son, which I've known the woman since right around the time I got married, and no, I've never heard. I've known that he was around. I know that he died. Never heard anything more than his name and that he was not with us anymore. Sue Leahy, who I used to work with, Sue Leahy Laterra, wrote, I came across the fact her own blog. She had started a nonprofit in memory of her husband, who one day goes to the doctor because he's been having headaches and whatnot. They diagnose him with a brain tumor. They give him like a month to live. He dies that week. One of my wife's coworkers came to me unsolicited and wanted to write about the passing of her father, who she was estranged from, and their last interaction together, which happened to be after he died. She took his ashes with her to go to Wegmans to pick up groceries. And it is funny in that sort of, in that sort of sense of this woman really walked around with a box of ashes at Wegmans. And then you read the story and the relationship they had and the circumstances of it. It really just it's tense. And that's where I think trying to bring perspectives to grief has been what I, really what this is about. And that I'm not the only one who's living with this in their head. And I think I'm the only, not the only one. I know there's others. How are others thinking about it? And how can we raise the level of conversation so that way people aren't living with this as that they're the only ones? That's not, you don't have to be alone in here. You're perfectly allowed to be alone. But how do we get you to a point where you don't feel like you have to be alone?
Well, and it struck me, and thank you for letting me write about my mom on that first one. And what struck me reading your blog is all of the other Griever's Digests are like just gut wrenching. A lot of them have been like gut wrenching stories. Like your mother-in-law talking about her son. Like that was just brutal to read in the most emotional way. And then you've got me, who's just like, I don't want to say, not to diminish my own story, but my mom had lung cancer from smoking and died. Like there's no diminishing him, but there's no dramatic effect. There's no story to it, but it's still all part of that. Like, I think there's that. I think what I appreciate too about the way you write about these topics is that you've got the harder stories, for lack of a better phrase. But you're right. But there's value in all of it. There's value in the I don't want to call my mother's death mundane, but you know, the common way it's supposed to go, you know.
Is it though the way it's supposed to go?
I know,
you know, because you know, when we talk about, there's something that I've been bouncing, going back and forth with, and I haven't figured out how to write this yet, so I'm working on it, is I don't ever want to pit death against one, right?
Right.
But
right.
Is it worse to have a long suffering? Is it worse from a from a griever's perspective to have the long suffering or the drop dead of a heart attack? And that's something that, so one of the other griever's digests, my coworker Dave Bertola, who my coworker, my day job, his sons went out running one day over the holiday break from college with one of their coaches, and they were standing around in a park just chatting afterwards, and they look over and the coach is like hands on his knees and, you know, just catching his breath, they figured, and then he just falls over. And he had a massive heart attack, dropped dead right in the park. And every time we talk about one of these things, it's like, what's worse? And so you say mundane. It's one of the highways of this, you know. It's, you know, what would have been worse, had she found it on a Monday and died on a Thursday, or would have been, you know, had it for a year and a half, 2 years, or I don't know. It all sucks, but the fact is that you have all these different perspectives in on it, and it all leads to the same point of the person that we want to be here is no longer here. And we all have feelings about it. Are we dealing with those feelings? Are we managing them? And how are we managing them?
So I know one Substack/blog/newsletter we both read is The Small Bow by AJ DeLorio. You're actually the one who turned me on to it. And reading that and reading you, I see a lot of common vibes to it. I'm wondering how much of an, for lack of a better word, inspiration his writing has been. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, you know, a lot. I would say that the Dirt Nap was sort of inspired by that, because so for the uninitiated, The Small Bow is AJ DeLorio's multi-time a week newsletter about addiction recovery, mental health, and the things that kind of go along with it. And I started reading it because I was one of the, so he used to be the editor of Deadspin, and I enjoyed his writing there. And he then took over Gawker, and I enjoyed his writing there. And then that whole thing happened with Hulk Hogan, and
the story where I got to put Hulk Hogan's sex tape on a slide in a media law class.
Yeah. So that all went down, and you know, I know he disappeared off the, you know, he self-exiled, and he came back here. And so his writing had always interested me, but what I was reading was a different version of him. And it wasn't gonzo journalism, hey, let's do the bombastic thing for that's going to get readers and give the middle finger to the establishment. It was true from the heart, this is what I'm going through. And at one time, he was, I had actually reached out because he was dealing with his now late father's dementia. I said, hey, listen, you know, reach out to the Alzheimer's Association. They may be able to provide your mother some services down in that area. I know the people in that office here. Take this number, reach out. If you talk to blah, 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 tell them that Jared Paventi gave your name and whatever. And we had communicated like that. But, you know, so when I was looking for a tone for Dirt Nap and looking for a start, that really was the inspiration to it. I decided I wanted it to be a little more me than, that sort of the tone that AJ strikes. I decided I wanted my tone to be a little sarcastic in some areas. And that was, so that's how I set my voice with it. But yeah, the whole idea of opening up and saying, look, this is some shit that's going on in my head and in my world. Maybe it's happening to you too. And I think that that's one of the good things that's come of it. And AJ has been very helpful. He's connected me with a couple of people he knew for interviews. And, one of these days I'm going to figure out how to talk to him, see if he'd be interested in doing a Q&A or something for me or, vice versa. But yeah, it's not like we're friends. We've exchanged emails a few times, but the Small Bow is, I think, one of two publications I pay for. And because it's the work that it's doing is important, I want to support that. And it's one of those situations where I want more of it. So I'm not just content with the free level. I want more of what he's doing. And that's where it, whatever the monthly is, it's a pittance. So that way I get to read more of what he's writing. And I do relate to some of it, even though I've never really had any addiction. The mental health concerns I relate to in many ways, and some of the family dynamic issues that he talks about. So.
So you did mention earlier that this is not your day job. So how do you kind of fit and work around your day job and family life and all of that and still do a weekly newsletter? That's significant too. This is,
Yeah.
these are lengthier essays.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's about carving up the time. I have a very understanding spouse, that's for starters, who, in addition to the fact that, I have an 8-to-5 job, which often is an 8-to-5. We get into a campaign or we get into a crisis mode with a storm. And I'm, like this past weekend on Sunday, I worked a 12-hour day. Just nature of the beast, nature of the industry. And I was going to write my restaurant review on Sunday, like I normally do, but couldn't. Had to go to the side. So I'll get to it this week. I'm ahead of schedule there. But that's where weekends come in. The kids are out all at different things on the weekends, so I have some free space to write. It's not that I don't know how to rest. I rest really well. No one naps quite like I do.
Can
But
confirm.
I'm also best when I have something to do. When I get bored, I get reckless. So, Sundays are usually restaurant review days, and Saturdays are usually dirt nap days and filling in the blanks during the week at night after work's done. Try to keep, obviously, ethically, try to keep dividing lines on everything. It's not like I'm making money on the Substack or anything. But at the same time, being paid to do a job, I shouldn't be doing, other stuff on the clock. So I don't.
So you mentioned earlier how the first blog was not just a creative excuse, but kind of something less weighty to kind of take your mind off of the stuff you were doing when you're working at Alzheimer's. And you see where I'm going with this. There's nothing kind of more weightier than this stuff that you're doing now. So I find that interesting. And, how are you protecting yourself against that burnout that you hit with the other one?
Yeah, that's a damn good question. I think the balance is that, in the two outside of work things, restaurant reviewing and this, I write in my own voice more Dirt Nap than the restaurant reviews, because I do have to maintain some level of, journalistic style when I'm writing a restaurant review, but it's that gives me some space to be creative in a writing environment. This is about, this is something else. And while it's there is creative space here, but it's also learning. So, I mean, in the past year, I have interacted with death doulas, people who do end of life care, like a doula. I have interacted with companies that do that transition your body back to the earth. You get buried in burlap, so that way the earth reabsorbs you.
You can become a tree. That's what we want to do.
Right.
But that's us.
A Buddhist, a Zen Buddhist who leads discussions on becoming one with death. So in what I've gone down the road with, it's also been a great deal of learning for me. I'm the type of person that when I read, I can't just read fiction. I have to read a nonfiction book. I usually alternate, because fiction's great. Don't get me wrong. I used to be only a nonfiction reader, and I realized that I was missing something fiction-wise. And I've re-embraced fiction, but I would always try to read something meaty at a topic I didn't know anything about, nonfiction-wise. And I found that this is helping to, it's helping to fill some of that gap where I don't feel like I need to go read about an obscure topic because it's something I never heard of before and I want to learn about it. I'm meeting people, I'm talking to people who and I'm actually doing some other reading in this space, where I am learning. And that's just as important. So I think it's that whole idea of this is not just a space where I emote and opine. It's a space where I'm learning as well.
So that leads into the last question I ask everybody. So I'll ask you, what's the best thing you've read lately?
I am in the middle of Jeanette McCurdy's memoir.
Oh, nice.
From Jeanette McCurdy was on iCarly. She wrote a memoir a couple years ago called, and I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm going to pop it open on the screen here. But she wrote a memoir called "I'm Glad My Mom Died," and it's not a just a it's not about that necessarily, but it's about her coming up in the Nickelodeon ecosystem, where she was on a Dan Schneider show. And then there's been all this controversy recently about Dan Schneider and how much of a shitheel he is. I'm gonna below your explicit rating for this episode as if I die trying. But also the abuse she underwent with her mother in terms of basically foisted eating disorders on her delayed introduction and then addiction to alcohol, sex, and whatever. It's a cautionary tale about parents getting their kids in the show business and the reasons why, and just what happens to those kids. It seems like that she's got herself, got everything back together in her life now. But I should finish it tonight. It's intense. It's a sad story, but knowing on the other side that she's figured all this out and she's come to grips with it, and she's dealing with it, is sort of has a bit of that, in I don't want to say inspiring, but it sort of has that, there's a maybe not the happiest ending in the world, but there's a soft land, there's a landing, maybe not soft, but a landing for
I've seen that in bookstores for the
her.
last couple of years, and I haven't picked it up. I haven't read it yet, but I've always been intrigued by it just because It sounded interesting. It sounded like, you know, the title is the title to like get people to buy it in some level, but it sounded super interesting. And I don't know her. iCarly was never big in our house, so I don't know her as an actress, but it has always sounded interesting. So I'm glad it's good.
Yeah, she spoke at SU last year, and
Okay.
there was an article, there was an interview with her in the Daily Orange, and that's what got me wise to it, and I put it on my my to read list. And it, I just have, I had finished a book last week. I was looking around my in the downloading app for the from the library system, and I realized that was on there, and it was the only book on my list that wasn't already out. So I checked it out, and it's not a, I don't want to say it's not a heavy read. It is. It's intense, but it moves. It's written well. You know, as well as you can write that sort of thing.
Yeah, I just finished, and I was inspired by the small bow. AJ mentioned this, Jane Levy's biography of Mickey Mantle
Oh,
from
yeah.
like a couple years. It's like 10 years old now, and really, really well done. And it's cool because it's a biography, but it's not the usual like 3 chapters about his childhood. It's much more kind of thematic, and you know, if you know the general Mickey Mantle story, you'll still learn stuff, but it doesn't get bogged down like, you know, tracing Mutt's his dad's family into Oklahoma or whatever. So it's a pretty good read.
And I've, I just, in terms of fiction, I've been reading a lot of Jean Hanf Korelitz lately. They're mysteries, but they're mysteries set in the academic world. It's there.
Ooh.
It's the. It's an odd way to frame it, but no. Well, there's one book where there's a murder involved, but most of the books deal with people navigating family dynamics, and it happens to be that they are also tied into the world of higher education. She's an engaging writer, and. I have another book of hers that are that is on my wait list at the library, and so
Good stuff. So I'll have links to all of those in the show notes. I have links
yeah.
to Dirt Nap in there. Not Blog Al Dente. Maybe I'll throw a Wayback Archive link to some of Blog Al Dente's greatest hits.
Let's see, I just scheduled the next few weeks. And a surprise announcement for you. Stay tuned for April 12th when the featured interview is your sister. So yeah.
Breaking news.
Yeah, there's some breaking news for you. We're gonna, one of the things I've been trying to do is expand the idea of grief beyond death. Loss is loss. You feel it differently. What are the different ways we feel loss? So recently there was a post on grieving relationships, did a friendship edition and a divorce edition. So what we're talking about, your sister and another friend of mine is grieving careers, grieving jobs.
Ooh,
I mean,
all
how your
right.
sister, left journalism and found her place still in a story, in a storytelling way. With the agency she's at now, and then the other person lost their job and what they've done to, how they grieve the loss of it and moved on and started something new. I saw the emotions and the mental state that goes around with that. So, trying to expand that definition of what loss is.
Right.
So,
No, it's good. It's all good
yeah,
stuff. I mean, it's
yeah.
bad, but it's good.
Oh yeah, it
But
sucks. So,
well, Jared Pavenit, this has been great. Thanks for joining us again.
thank you, Brian.
Thanks for listening to The Other 51. Special thanks to Jared Pavenny for agreeing to be on the episode and chatting so openly. And thanks to Ella Pavenny for letting Jared talk all that time. You can find us wherever you get your podcast. Show notes for this episode will have all the links to Jared's blog and all the books that we talked about. Jen Moritz does our graphic design. Ellie Moritz does our music. I'm Brian, and I'll talk to you later.